Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahabiryankaravavahai Tejasvinavahitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare
Chao Paramatma Sandarbha Adhyayana 3 Adhikarna 2 The Theory of Transformation, Parinamabad, Anuchedas 56-60, Adhikarna Kashika. Having described the functions of Bahiranga Shakti and have specified that the Lord is the master of both the Jiva and Maya, the current Adhikarna illuminates on the relationship of the Lord with the material creation. Topic: Origin of the Creation. Intrigued every philosopher and scientist throughout the history of mankind. However, the truth about the material creation is hardly understood by anyone, because it is beyond the sensual and intellectual faculties of humans. Thus, the causation theories proposed by various materialistic philosophers always contain numerous canards. The atheistic scholars and modern scientists believe that there is no cause or purpose for the creation and thus limit their awareness to only the senses, while paying no heed to the higher reality. Even the six theistic Vedic schools have different opinions on the manifestation of the material creation. Among the six schools, only the Vedantic school offers comprehensive explanation on the relationship between Chit, Jiva, Achit, material world, and Ishwara, Supreme Lord. Nonetheless, the Advaitavadis misconstrue that the material creation is illusory and thus, except for the Vaishnavas, the theories proposed by all other schools are incongruous with the reality, as they do not possess complete knowledge of the Creator and the created. Footnote 4. The following is described in relation to the material causality of Brahman in the book Six Systems of Philosophy by His Holiness Suhutra Swami Maharaj. One of the major challenges of Vedanta is to provide a satisfactory explanation of the material causality of Brahman. The Upanishads indicate that Brahman is the material cause, upadana karana, of the universe on the analogy of the lump of clay being the material cause of the pot. On the strength of the Upanishadic teaching, all Vedantists except Madhva accept that Brahman is the material cause of the universe. The Shruti texts also categorically declare that Brahman is immutable, that is, not subject to any kind of change. The causality of Brahman thus needs to be accounted for without affecting the Sarupa of Brahman. How is this to be done? Each school of Vedanta attempts to offer an explanation in this regard. There are three important theories of material causality of Brahman. A. Brahman itself transforms into the universe, a view held by Yadava Prakash and Bhaskara. This is known as Brahma Parinamabad. B. Brahman associated with Chit and Achit, in their subtle form, is the material cause of the universe. This view is held by the Vishishtadvaita and may be regarded as modified Brahma Parinamabad. C. Brahman is the basis of the illusory appearance of the universe, is its material cause. This is the Advaita view known as Vivartavad. Does it continue, or that's
no.
It? Okay. So these are the three forms that are not complete, or what?
Modified Brahma Parinama is the Shakti Parinama. Vishishtadvaita word, like, which is...
Oh, B. So then, I see. Then you should put that in there, in brackets, after Brahma Parinama. There's a modified Brahma Parinama. Okay. Then, in this... and the next few Adhikarnas, the author, Srila Jiva Goswami, conclusively proves the Supreme Lord as the material cause of the universe, and also exposes the fallacies of all the opposing theories. The current Adhikarana particularly highlights that the universe is real and is a transformation of the Lord Shakti. In Adocheta 56, the material universe, which is the result of Maya, is stated as the form of the Lord. But the universal form is distinguished from the spiritual forms of the Lord, manifested by his own Swarup Shakti. In the next Anucheda, thus the material creation is one with and also different from the Lord. Further light is shed on this in the next two Anuchedas, where the Shakti Parinamavad, universe is the transformation of the Lord Shakti, is elaborated. Though Paramatma exists with an unchanging nature, by his inconceivable Shakti, he is able to transform into the shape of the universe. His, quote-unquote, being does not change in his Swarup, but changes in his Dravya Shakti, which manifests an expanded form, Vyuha, as Pradhan, just like the Chintamani, which produces objects, or a magna, which moves iron. Transformation of Paramatma by means of his Shakti is thus the conclusion of scripture and the proposition of Vivartavadis, that the world is false and is an illusion imposed on Brahman is fallacious. Maybe between the conclusion of scripture and the proposition of Vivarta there, right there, put a dash. So you understand that you're separating that sentence very strongly. Okay. Anucheda 56. Right. Hmm.
In the previous, in the footnote.
Right.
See, Brahman as the basis of the illusory appearance of the universe.
Yes.
This is not true. And then they say that it's this illusion imposed on Brahman at the end of this Nakashika. So it's the same thing?
Basically. It's all this because basically what you're going to have is whatever philosophy other than Shakti Parinamavad, then you're always going to have inconsistencies. Because everybody has to accept that Brahman is immutable. That is there. Because that's otherwise what's going to be the point of Brahman if it's changeable. That's the whole point, is that it's unchanging. You know? But then the difficulty comes is that it also points out that the Brahman is the basis of the material creation, right? So it's the material cause, right? So now, how to put those two together unless you understand the Lord has Shaktis, and therefore Shaktis transform, then you're going to come up with something that doesn't quite work. Does that make sense? So that's the difficulty, is that there's always going to be inconsistencies in these philosophies. So that's what the whole point is, that the acharyas then point out those inconsistencies. So that in one place it says this, in one place it says that, it's not that one's right, the other one's right. They're just different ways they come up with. And if you ask a question from this, they'll say this. If you ask a question of that, they'll say something else. You know what I'm saying? You know, so that's going to be the difficulty, is that they're going to try to pull all these things together, but they can't comprehensively pull them together because there's no central feature, right? It means they have Brahman, but then the problem is Brahman's unchanging or this or that, depending upon how extreme they get, you know, because immaterially you take, just like this, okay, contamination goes by touch. Okay? So if my hand, let's say, is dirty, I put my hand in my mouth. Okay? My hand is dirty. Now if I touch the rug, now the rug's dirty. Right? But then the rug is touching the floor. And this floor is touching, you know, the building. And the building is touching the land here. And that's touching. So when I touch the ground, the whole universe becomes contaminated. You know what I'm saying? So people take whatever they're thinking to extremes. They just keep going like that. It's just the way they find another thing you can add, another, oh, what about this one? Because they don't have anything to hold it together. So that's why it's said they're speculating. and just going on the, I say, Gita Manoratha. They just go on the chariot of the mind, riding around and coming up with this and that. And so when you bring up that, oh, this doesn't work, then they say, okay, well, what about that? But they only address the point that you pointed out. And then another point that you show is wrong, they'll come up with another theory for that. So now it gets even farther apart. You know, so that's the thing, is that it's not held together. So that's why then when they thought about it enough that it appears to be whatever in the discussion, they can kind of hold their own. That's called a vada. You know, they thought about it enough, you can say, you know, it does that. But it doesn't mean that it's correct. It just means it works in an argument. You can apply rhetoric upon it, and it seems to work fairly well, right? You know, so that's going to be the difficulty, is that they never actually work. So that one is saying one thing, one's saying the other. That's the whole point. In one situation they'll say this, in another situation they'll say that. Because they don't want to come down to the basis that there's only Brahman, so everything's Brahman, so therefore Maya and the Jiva must also be Brahman. They'll accept that the Jiva, okay, is the covered portion of Brahman, because they want to become Brahman. But then illusion also is part of Brahman. That they don't want, because then they're an illusion, and that's giving them trouble. So they want to stay as far away from illusion as possible. So there's no consistency in their philosophy, because it's materially motivated, right? Because you have three material motives. You have wanting to enjoy, then being pessimistic about enjoying, and then being angry that you can't enjoy. And so you have these three extremes. So something says, yeah. Yeah?
The only way to reconcile everything is to accept the position of Bhagavan.
Yes, so because Bhagavan means it's the Lord and His energies.
Yes.
That's the whole point, is because we're looking at it that, you know, we say He has the six opulences and all that, because then, you know, we understand someone's greater. But it means that He's interacting with these opulences, yes. That He's into, so it's dynamic. So that aspect is that, therefore, then, if everything's just Him, that means then also the transformation of everything is also just Him.
Yes.
But it's transformed, so it has another thing. So it's still not His Sarup.
Yes.
And because of His Shaktis, unlimited Shaktis, He can create all these things, and it doesn't affect His Sarup.
Yes.
Even though these energies come from Him, but the energies, they transform. He doesn't transform. He being the source, just like the powerhouse is the source of electricity, and that remains. But now that the electricity is running your oven or running your refrigerator, that is doesn't affect the generator. You know, people who don't understand what's going on, they'll say, oh, now he becomes the refrigerator. If he's everything, he becomes the refrigerator. No. It's all his energies. So that's the thing, is that there's a non-difference.
Because now the six schools, they mainly try to focus on Brahman, not on Bhagavan.
Yeah, six schools focused on Brahman.
And
Bhagavan doesn't feature.
And we cannot understand really Brahman if we don't know Bhagavan.
No, you can't.
It is one of the main mistakes from the beginning.
Yes. That's the whole thing, is that only the Vaishnava philosophy can actually understand the whole thing.
Yes.
Because they're starting from somewhere else. They're starting with their speculation and trying to figure out.
Yes.
Like that. So that's the difficulties. They don't know what's going on.
Yes.
You know, so that's the problem comes down to it, that the Vedas are describing the Vaishnava philosophy, and they're describing a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva. Now it's just a matter of how much people appreciate that. And since they're using the inductive method, they can never fully appreciate. You know, they get some little bit. Because transcendence is beyond, as it pointed out before, it's beyond the senses. And so if all you're using is the senses to try to understand things, it'll never work. So that's the difficulty that comes up, is that trying to understand all these things without actually understanding the starting at the top at Bhagavan, then you can't fully understand Paramatma, Brahman, or the material world and the living entities. Like that, it's already a fault. But it's not that they're not based on certain aspects of the Vedas, and so as systems, they have some good points. But as an actual overall philosophy, they all fail. Like Gotama, he develops Nyaya. The other five schools don't even bother with developing Nyaya. He's already done it. You know, the aspect of the atomic theory, that's already done. So you don't have to worry about it. Right? The Shankya, all the different things of the universe, you don't have to worry about that. You know, yoga, how the Ashtanga and that, and how the mind goes up through, it's already defined because that's what he's focused on. You don't have to deal with that. Or karma and how the cycle works and how the soul moves through the universe and all that, that's already been nicely described. But they're all taking from the scriptures. But they don't know how to hold all of those points together. You know, or then Shankara is on the emphasis on Brahman, but they don't know how to hold all this together. You know, so then the Vaishnavas will bring it together with the aspect of, you know, serving the Supreme Lord, who is Bhagavan, but their emphasis is on him as the Lord of the energies. That's the main focus. But it's that Achintabheda Peda Tattva brings all of it, how he is as Bhagavan, as the supreme enjoyer, how all this is expanded from there. Does that make sense? Like that. So basically only the Gaudiya Vaishnavas can explain the whole thing completely and how everything has its position. But as far as I'm making a distinction between actual transcendence and material, that all the Vaishnava Acharyas have done. But to bring it to its topmost position, where everything is perfectly balanced, that you'll only get with. Does that make sense? Yes.
Maharaj, Jiva is mentioned as Amsha of Lord.
Yes.
Now Brahman is immutable. So how do we understand he's become Amsha of Lord, the part of Lord?
How does he become? I bet, who said he became?
He already exists.
Yeah. So then, if something already exists, what's the problem? If Brahman is immutable, and Brahman includes his Shaktis, see, because in this, you're leaving out the Shaktis. That's why it's a confusion. If you're accepting the Shaktis, where's the confusion? So we're one of those Shaktis. So why for us to be part of it, does it have to be immutable? That the frying pan is part of the kitchen. Now the whole kitchen changes and the whole concept changes, and now I can't look at the kitchen the same way ever again. And is that what happened? No.
Shakti only, not directly. Shakti of Brahman.
Yes, always. So that's the point. Brahman has Shaktis. That's the difficulty, is that in the schools, in the first and third, they're not accepting Brahman has Shaktis. So that's why they have problems. So only the Vaishnavas understand that Brahman has Shaktis. Now it's just a matter of how you're dealing. Is he just the Lord of the Shaktis, or, you know, it's about him, the rasa with his Shaktis. Right? Means all of them are there. Because even if you have the impersonal form of the Lord, you also have the Brahman, you also have the impersonal form of his energies. So they go together. Just like you have the formal aspect of Paramatma, and you have the formal aspects of the energies, right? You know, and then you have the his, you know, then his natural pastime forms, where then it's about rasa, not about his being God. Because otherwise God's there surrounded by his eight Shaktis and all that. It's because he's God. But here it's a matter of what is the interaction between God and those Shaktis. So that from the Paramatma to the other, it's not that you're changing. Right? It's just you're changing the view and understanding. Does that make sense? Yeah, so Paramatma is personal but localized. So it's just a particular function's being looked at, you're only looking at that. Does that make sense?
So Maharaj, every person has some impersonal aspect also. Like Krishna, every person has impersonal presentation.
Yeah.
And it is a common thing in all the jiva.
Point is that's coming up because you have cause and effect. You're going to see the qualities of the effect and the cause. A clay pot will act like clay.
Yes.
So why wouldn't the jiva have these qualities? Does that make sense? Yeah. So the whole point is all these things are expanded. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like someone has this house. But is the house him?
No. Yes, it's belong to him.
Yeah, so does the material world and everything belong to Krishna. So, see, is that we're looking at it. See, we also is that there's this idea that impersonal is something separate.
Yes.
Oh, we have material, then you have this other thing. It's completely separate.
Yes.
It's how you're looking at it.
Yes.
Means, let us say we talk about people. That's impersonal.
Yes.
You understand? That's why we, you know, let's say, you know, like we having the other day, you can have all these Polish jokes. Because it's about Polish.
Yes.
It's not about a person.
Yes.
So it's impersonal.
Yes.
So it's easy in an impersonal thing to have that aspect.
Yes.
You understand? Because we're thinking a personal means nothingness. There's no such thing. Impersonal just means it's generic. Like I have a sack of rice. That's generic.
Mm-hmm.
Then I take some of this and make it into this, some of it to make it into that. Then it starts taking on certain qualities.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then, you know, offering that to the Lord, the devotee's eating, that brings it to the top level.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that we're contaminated by this idea that this impersonal is something else.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't exist. It's in a figment of the material mind, right? Because we're dealing with the material qualities here, right? And because of that, when we try to analyze the Supreme, we're always going to come up with these misunderstandings, right? So that's the things we have these impurities of impersonalism, of voidism. You know, of karma, vikarma, you know, being a nice guy and doing philanthropic or altruistic work, is that's a good thing. People respect that. They'll think, well, you know, we're very good. That will give, you know, some real credence to our society. But it's kind of like saying, okay, the guy is a lawyer. And so if he emphasizes, you know, about his charity work, that will make people interested in his law firm. No, they might be interested in his charity work. They'll come to him and say, oh, we have this going on. Would you like to take part? It doesn't mean they're going to come to him for law. You know what I'm saying? So that's the point. He's a professional as a lawyer, not as a philanthropist. He may do that, and that may be part of his character. But as soon as you make that as that's the main thing, the central feature, then you've lost the whole point. Does that make sense? You know, so you have to know what you're dealing with, what's the angle of what you're looking at it from. Right? So we have all these contaminations that the acharyas are pointing out, the scriptures are pointing out. And we have to give them up. And so, but we give them up in increments. You know, there's this whole big pile of, you know, anarta. And then, you know, in the example, it deals with one of those. And we accept that. But then the rest of it remains. You know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You know, because it's not exactly in the way. Oh, it mentioned, you know, yes, feeding poor children. Okay. Then you give up that as a goal. But what about poor dogs or poor teenagers or poor adults or poor old people? That we haven't dealt with yet because in my example I didn't deal with that. But we're supposed to use the intelligence and use, and the example is to give you an idea.
Yeah.
You know, it's like when you test one grain of rice, you know if the whole pot's cooked or not. You don't have to go through each grain.
Yeah.
But that's the problem. We do. That's why you see the acharya here in the it goes through every possible way you could make you know, a speculative wrong understanding, you know, on the jiva, on the Lord, and on his energies. And that's why it's so detailed. We say, why so much detail? But the point is because there's some inherent basis here. You understand? So that's what comes up. And so we don't even notice it. We just think, oh, here's something new. Hey, they didn't deal with this. And it's because we don't think. So the whole discussion is trying to get us to think in a particular way.
Yeah.
That means we're starting with Krishna.
Yeah.
And then how we connect to Krishna, how everything connects to Krishna. Then things start to make sense. If we don't see it in that way, then the difficulty comes up is that we won't appreciate, we won't understand. You know, we'll understand something, like the impersonalists, they understand that there is a need of something beyond, a spiritual platform, like that. And so that there's a need, and through knowledge you'll elevate yourself, and through, you know, how you say, renunciation and all these things, which are correct elements. But they're very mechanical about it. Because the point is I give up for my own sense gathering, but why not as I give up for Krishna's? That doesn't come into the context because they don't understand the Supreme as a person and themselves as a person. So it's very difficult, you know, to perform an activity that doesn't have a positive purpose. Does that make sense?
Without accepting Bhagavan and without having the right intent, it's always a problem.
Yes. Yes.
Otherwise, because sometimes we can expect Bhagavan but not want it to serve him.
Yes. Well, that's theirs, that the six schools accept that there's a Supreme, but it's not about serving. None of them culminate in bhakti. It's about what will I get from this. So that's the material context, is what am I getting, rather than what the service to Krishna. Because, see, as an individual, you already exist as an individual and all that. But the point is that interaction with others, you know, if it's about yourself, then, okay, even if you connect everyone to yourself, it's still you're dependent upon your self-satisfaction. And if you are naturally satisfied, then why wouldn't you be satisfied now? So even if I add more things, that can go on unlimitedly. As examples, we see someone gets into a particular thing, they have to keep getting. You know, someone's into cars, they keep getting more cars. Someone's into tattoos, they keep getting more tattoos. You know, there comes a point where you have to put tattoos on tattoos. There's no more space. You know, or they become a tattoo artist so they can put tattoos on other people, right? You know, so it's somehow or another, it's like, but whatever it is, someone wants money. There's no end to the money. You know, they think, oh, if I just become a billionaire. But once they become a billionaire, then they realize there's trillionaires, right? In the media, they only talk about billionaires. Have you ever noticed? They never talk about the trillionaires. Never. Why? Because the trillionaires own everything, so they're not about to let anyone talk about them. But no one talks about them. You know? And they want, and they themselves want more. You know, it's whatever they can get. And it's all about just more. You know, it's just like one of the trillionaires, and he somehow or another something doesn't work. He wants something. He's building some special edifice, you know, biggest in the world and best in this and that. But he somehow or another runs out of some money. Something didn't work out. So then he asks another one of these guys, and he says, "Yeah, I'll give the money, you know, so that you can finish it, as long as you name it after me." You know, and so even though one guy's built it, it's named after the other guy who put up the money. I'm not sure if he paid it back or he just said, "No, as long as you just put my name, you can have the money." I don't know the details, but like that. Does that make sense? You know, it's always that thing is that they're just that control. So there's never enough. You know, it's just like Prabhupada said, we're building this big thing, you know, here in Mayapur and all that. I was talking, I think, to the top Bhila at the time, maybe GD or whatever his name was. And so then he was interested in the project, said, "I'll finance the whole thing as long as you call it Bhila Nagar." And Prabhupada says, "No, it's Mayapur. You know, it's about Lord Chaitanya, not about Mr. Bhila." And so then he wouldn't give the money. You know, so like that. It's just, there's no end. However far you get, you always want more. Wherever you are now, you take that as your identity and you want more. So being greedy, there's no end to it. Because wherever you situate yourself, you still want more. If you're satisfied, it doesn't matter where you are, you're satisfied. Does that make sense? So the materialistic mentality, That's the problem. We're taking that as the material world, as this, as lack of knowledge, as all. No, it's the materialistic mentality. And so, therefore, then the Vedas give major tools by which we can approach that materialistic mentality. Right? And this is these are the aspects of religion. Right? So in that, there's going to be knowledge, that means there's going to be study, there's going to be brahmacharya, there's going to be austerity, then, you know, like this, there's going to be a varnashram, there's going to be charity, you know, there's going to be, all these different things are going to be there as ways to get at our mentality, right? If I'm given charity, then what is it doing? It's like I'm giving up something that's important to me. You know, humility, you know, it's because I think I'm the Lord of the universe. You know, responsibility in Varnashram, because I think it's all about me, but to make it work, you have to make it about other people. You know, does that make sense? Knowledge, I think I know everything. No, but I have to surrender that I don't know, and I have to study. Yeah. Why? Because Krishna's the center. He's one to be known. He's the source of everything. It's about him. Right? So relationships then mean where you make it about the other person. So in the sense where it's actually about the other person, not you about yourself, can only happen on the transcendental platform, because in the material it's always about ourselves, even if it's extended. But it's only just about ourselves. Right? But in the spiritual, then it's about the other person. That's why then the rasa aspect is the top of all these. That understanding of Bhagavan, that's the top, because that rasa means it's about the ashraya and the vishaya. Mm-hmm. How the devotee is surrendered to the Lord. That's the main principle. Does that make sense? So that's then what is trying to be gotten to. So only the Vaishnavas can bring you fully to that platform. Other aspects are useful, right? They're useful in the process, but they will never completely bring you there, because they only deal with certain aspects of religion. And they only have a very minor understanding, if at all, of transcendental knowledge. because it's about Krishna, right? And then the difficulty comes up as we try to make it about ourselves. So that's not transcendental. And even when we add in God, we see in the moral, you know, the theistic morality, God's just part of their morality. Because then if something happens that they think is immoral, then they'll blame God. How did God allow this? I'm doing everything right. I go to the church, you know, or my place of worship once a week, you know, for an hour, you know, like that. And so, you know, you add all that up. You know, so that 1 hour, you know, you have 24 hours in a day, you know, times seven. So you're going to get quite a few hours, right? Or what our mathematician? 24 times seven.
24 times seven. 168.
168. So now, take off 1 hour. So 167. So this 1 hour has to cancel out whatever I do in the 167 hours. And even if I'm a good person and I do a little extra something like that, put in another couple of hours here and there, you know, 168. So even I put in 8 hours a week. But that's 160 hours that somehow or another that has to completely take care of. So then is it about God? Is it about devotion to God? Or it's about God's part of my sense of morality? What's good, what I should get, what others should get, who should not get? You know what I'm saying? So it's a little businessy. It doesn't really have that sense of devotion. Does that make sense? Like that. It means there must be some devotion, but it's not as much. So therefore their morality goes. So the ultimate point comes down is that the personal aspect of the relationship of ourselves with the Lord, that's what we're trying to get to. But we're trying to cut through all these other things because not understanding that, we take it all these other things are important. And so then political issues, this, that, we take them as prominent. And because of that, we take it that these political issues, unless these are resolved, then we can't move forward, when it's kind of like you've created the political issue. It's your viewpoint. You're looking at it like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, like, the first world, oh, how can you do this and that, and you have all these things, and you're so backwards. But if we step back from that first world, the whole rest of the world looks at the first world that they're the problem. They're the one destroying culture. It means you had a culture in the Americas. Who destroyed it? Europe. You had a culture in Africa. Who destroyed it? Europe. You had a culture in Asia and all that. Who destroyed it? Europe. What about the Middle East? Europe. So destruction of culture all over the world is done by this so-called few countries of the first world. Right? And then if any of these conquered countries, you know, come up to the point where they're powerful enough, then they start doing the same thing themselves. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point, is that it's a material mentality. And that we always are seeing, no, we're creating this. That, no, but what about this issue and that issue? It's like other places, they couldn't care less. They're more worried about taking care of the family or, you know, other things like that. So this becomes the important thing, you know. So we create our own obstacles. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like you keep a cat, it's hard to walk. No? Like that. So then, because they're the ones that get into your feet, but why is it there? You're keeping the cat? Don't complain. Ah, this cat, it always gets stuck in my feet when I walk. You're keeping the cat, you know? Dogs don't do that. You know, maybe they bite your ankle, but, you know. Or, you know, you can't walk because they took your shoes and they're chewing on them. That's another thing. But So does that make sense? So we're trying to reverse our mentality back to its natural position. That's what we're trying to do. Is that... We're good?
I think that one of the aspects of delusion is that for many devotees, they think we don't have issues just because they are not aware of them.
And yes.
As soon as you mention something like you described previously, immediately that, you know, that nature comes up. Means you do have an issue. Mm-hmm. You just never dealt with it. But
yes.
It is there. So, like, you know, Rupa Goswami quote in Sarvabhadi Niyam Muktam, we have to remove all of them.
Mm.
So, this course helps us to remove all the issues. Otherwise, we think, yeah, we're good.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, we aren't. We're full of issues inside of us.
Yeah.
We don't deal with them because we're not aware.
We're not aware. Yeah, because where's the forum? Like that. Like that. I mean, it's given, the acharyas have given the form, Srila Prabhupada's given, that's what the whole idea of the Bhagavatam classes and all that is. It's a position of discussion of the philosophy in that. And then you can use it in that way, or it just becomes, you know, one of the things that you just do. But even, that's the beauty of the Krishna consciousness, is that it's connected to Krishna, even if you don't fully use the discussion on Krishna consciousness to its full advantage, you're still getting spiritual benefit. You're still advancing. That's the nice thing about it. Even if you do everything that we do that Prabhupada's given us ritualistically, without thinking about it at all, you're still going to be purified and advanced. You know, it brings you closer and closer to Brahma-Bhuta, right? But to go from Brahma-Bhuta to Prema, that you have to make the choice. You have to make that effort. But the more purified you are, as Prabhu pointed out, the less issues, then the easier that is. Issues are what gets in the way. Issues are our cats. You know. Like that.
But I think first ego is a problem.
Yes, because we identify with all these things and we think that this is important. Because there's that three kinds of false ego. Yeah. So those, the false ego based on this is our, you know, this is our position, so these are our duties, you know, as given in the scripture. So generally speaking, we don't have to worry about that one false ego. So that's, you know, out of three kinds of false egos that we can get caught up by, one we generally don't have to worry about at all. So that's a good thing, right? It means that, you know, now it's just down to two, right? Because we're trying to get rid of all of them. One, it never comes up, so then like that. Then the second one is where we want to enjoy, like that. And so directly that we're focused on, then that's going to be, you know, occasionally. You know, how often is there an opportunity for enjoying, like that? You know, especially as devotees, you know, we're always saying that that's not a good thing. So that only leaves us one kind of false ego, you know, false id tamasa, you know, just in the mode of ignorance, you know, so. Yeah. But
also, Maharaj, I was thinking that so far it's not really clear. I mean, we've established that Brahman has energies.
Yes.
And energies transform.
Yes.
With that, no issue. But it sounds, with according to our discussion, how it develops, that Brahman also transforms. Because as a Upadana, he transforms into Virat Purush. And then from the Virat Purush, all the ingredients are taken and then used in the creation.
But that's all done as energy. That's the thing, is that desire, that's coming from the person. So Krishna's Brahman, but he's the supreme Brahman. But his features, Brahman, is one of his features. So that Brahman does everything, you know, as far as creation and all expansion of everything, that's going on by his will. So that's the thing, by his willpower it goes on. So that's another aspect, is that when we talk about Brahman, we think only Brahman. But the point is, Brahman is just Krishna's effulgence. So it's the basis of everything. Everything's like all the planets are sitting in Brahman. The Brahma Jyotis there, all the spiritual planets sit in Brahman. The material world also, it's all sitting in Brahman. Just here because of the covering, therefore you don't see it. But the point is the energy and him are non-different. Right? But there's a difference in the Sarup. So that's why we say it's non-different from him, but it still doesn't affect his Sarup. He's still different. That's the meaning of simultaneously one and different. Does that make sense? So he's expanding as everything adds his energy. Because the Virat Purush, the point is the potency of it, the quality of it that is there. So we're talking about that particular quality, then we see something. Because if something doesn't have a quality, then it may have the form of that, but it doesn't perform the duties of that, because that is something can only when it can do an activity, then you can get a result. Right? And it's just like, does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, so let's say I have a hammer, and this hammer is made out of, let's say, styrofoam. You know, taking the thing and, you know, gotten the knife and hot knife and cut it very nicely. It looks exactly like a hammer, painted up nicely and everything like that. But then it can't do the work of a hammer. So it looks like a hammer. It's got the shape of a hammer. So it exists and it has the visesha. It's unique. It's different from other things that it looks like a hammer.
Yeah.
But its activity, it can't perform the work of a hammer and can't give you the results of a hammer. So therefore, we'd call it a hammer in name only. Does that make sense? So it has that. So that potency is what is what's important. And so that's how Krishna. But the potency is non-different from him. So he is there, but at the same time he's not. He's there, he's conscious of everything, but at the same time he's not. That's the difficulty. It comes down to is that the Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva, it goes beyond the mundane logic. So,
yeah.
So it always comes back to that, because I think that's the last of all the things. You know, it means what you're talking about here, it will get to that. It's just that, you know, we're used to, you know, smaller things, and so we get this, and so we'll go through all of the stages. Like he brought up the Satkaryavad. That's also coming up. But it's just, he'll deal with each thing one at a time until everything's dealt. Then we'll move to the next thing and deal like this until it gets. So in that way, we'll get everything. It'll just take a little time. Anucheta 56. Thus in two sandarbhas, Bhagavat and Paramatma, the three Shaktis have been described. Verses have been gathered below in order to destroy error arising from not differentiating between them, since the names are sometimes used interchangeably. Right, so yeah. So here he's pointing out the names are used interchangeably because you're talking about a certain aspect of something. And so because of that, because we identify things by you know, I mean, of course the form is there, but it's the quality of it that we see. And so we'll talk about the qualities of things. Like when we're talking about Pradhan, Avyakta, and what was the last one? Prakriti. We're talking about the qualities of them. And so the particular quality is then what you would use one word or another. So in that way, these different names can be interchangeable, and that can create confusion. But it's because we're used to it has a particular form. Whether it can do anything or not, that actually the scientists don't care about. Right, the administrators and the business community, they care more about that and they make it happen.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is we're so used to knowledge just being, you know, what something is, but then after that, it's what it does. Like you teach the kid, okay, this is a pot, this is a rug, but then after a while, they have to know what the pot's for, what the rug's for. Otherwise, to them, they're all games. You know, they'll happily pick up this, you know, how you say, microphone and all that, and walk off with it, and, you know, play games with it. Dress it up, you know, put it to sleep, feed it lunch, you know, like that. It'll all happen. Maya is a term for both the internal, spiritual, and external material shaktis. It is sometimes used to indicate pradhan, upadana aspect of Maya, which functions to cause bewilderment. Prakriti is used in reference to Maya, bahiranga shakti, and pradhana. Antaranga shakti, internal, is also called the chit shakti. It's used in relation to the pure jiva and the Lord's knowledge and power. Vidya shakti, knowledge, is said to describe both the chit shakti and maya shakti. When the chit shakti is called maya, it is actually yoga maya. Right? So we see here where he's defining how the words get the overlapping applications. Because vidya, you have the material vidya, what we call is just knowledge here, but it's still within the context of avidya. Then you have the actual vidya shakti, which is the transcendental knowledge. Right, then you have the avidya that covers, and within that, then you have knowledge and that. So, you know, it's just like here, a man will be said he's knowledgeable because he has facts of the world, but he doesn't know who he is or anything. So actually, he's not educated. He's not that, you know, as in his intelligence is not being well applied. So that was Sanatana Goswami's point. Right, so that's why you have these examples, is that who can say they're more educated than Sanatana Goswami, you know, or Rupa Goswami, who can say? Yes?
And the material vidya includes the knowledge of how to get out of the material world.
It gives some indication, because how to get out, that'll be the actual vidya, but because it can bring you close to that. See, we're dealing with real vidya. Because we're dealing with Bhagavatam and the scriptures and the comments of the Acharyas. But let's say like these other schools of thought, then they're going to be dealing with just the religious aspects and those aspects that are going to be useful towards that. You know, being detached, being renounced, not absorbing yourself in sense gratification. Like that, having knowledge that the body is made out of these elements, so like this, but they're only using it in that way. So that's the thing: is you have these knowledge that can be used on both sides. That's why you see is that you have paravidya, then you have what's not paravidya, right? So aparavidya means not para. But then you also have avidya. So if apara is used in pursuance of paravidya, it's called aparavidya. If it's not used, it's called avidya. So you'll find in the your general description, you're going to have para and apara, right? Because everybody's going to be working with it. But in the Upanishads, it has paravidya and avidya. Because being the path of renunciation, they don't use aparavidya. Because for them, it's all avidya. You know what I'm saying? So they don't have. So for us, then in karma yoga, you're using the aparavidya in Krishna's service. So then it takes on that transcendental effect. As long as you want to use it for Krishna, it'll give that effect. When you don't use it for Krishna, it doesn't give that effect. You know, but because it's in relation to Krishna overall, Krishna will be managing it as super soul. So you're doing something, say some material, like say making money. So you're doing it. Sometimes you're thinking about Krishna and how it connects to Krishna and using for Krishna. And sometimes you're not. So when you are, you're definitely getting the spiritual benefit. When you're not, Krishna is still organizing that. It may be through the material energy, but he's still organizing it. But for the karmi, just the material energy is organizing because she knows what to do. Does that make sense? So you're personal, he's personal. You're not personal, he also deals through the impersonal. You know, so like the scientists, they only see the Supreme as material elements that they can perceive with their senses and analyze with their mind and intelligence. So that's all the more they see of Krishna. But it's all Krishna anyway. They're dealing with Krishna.
As you explained, it seems like it's like seamless transformation.
It is seamless. Yeah, it is seamless because Krishna's there. He's the one that's in everything and in between. So he's there with all his shaktis. And these are transformation that you get this, but you deal with it in connection with him, you're dealing with Yogamaya. You're dealing with Mahamaya. The same thing. You know, that's why the example is given of the cat and the kitten, or the cat and the rat. It's the same technique. Like that. It's the same technique. Like you see, the cat carries the kitten. They grab him by the neck. The cat carries the rat. They grab him by the neck. It's not that the kitten's grabbed by the neck and the rat they're dragging by the tail. No, it's the same technique. But one is nourishment, one's death. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that that's because there is only Krishna. There isn't something else. So everything is Krishna. He's doing all these things. And when it's seen like that, then you're always in Krishna consciousness. You are residing in the spiritual platform. Does that make sense? Like that. You're not in the material world. Right? And then as you develop your love for Krishna, then you'll be residing there. That's why I said, wherever Lord Chaitanya is, that's Vrindavan, because he's always seeing Krishna in Vrindavan. Connected, you know, so they're connected with everything, so he's always in Vrindavan. Is that? Is that okay?
Yeah.
So we're trying to shift the consciousness. Right? We're not going to shift the what do you call it? The upadana, you know, aspect of the material energy. Your body's not going to change. But we can shift from Jiva Maya to Yoga Maya. Right? Does that make sense? It's not that when you become Krishna conscious, the power of your glasses change or something, or your shoe size is different, or, you know, your pant size is different. No, it stays the same. So that's the thing. That's why you say you don't have to change anything. It means that there's no need of the external change. What you're changing is the consciousness. And if you change, and whatever you have your house because of your consciousness. So if you change the consciousness, that house is useful in Krishna's service, it will be maintained. Because it's now about using everything for Krishna. But if you find that house is not so useful for Krishna, then you might make an adjustment. But that happens because of change in consciousness, not by a change in the environment. Is that?
Ultimate challenge.
Yes, the ultimate challenge. Yeah, change in consciousness. But it's the simplest. That's the thing. Other things, you might have to change so many things, but for us, you don't have to change. You know? But why? Because you're changing the consciousness. But we can't use this point of the philosophy to say, see, you don't have to change the external and then not change the consciousness. Right? In other words, we're putting it on changing, dealing with the Jiva Maya. You know, because we're not so... Because if you deal with the Jiva Maya, the Upadana is going to be taken care of. But if you deal with it the material consciousness, then the material facilities you have will be engaged properly. So when we say you don't have to change your facilities, it's not about the facilities, it's about the consciousness. You know, it's just like I say, it's not like this pot's empty. It's not about changing the pot, it's about putting water inside. Right? Now if I take it, oh, see, they say there's no, you don't need to change the pot, you know, so the pot's empty, so hey, that's the way it is. No, you have to put water. You know what I'm saying? So, oh, we don't have to change the facilities that we're in. Or that kind of thing. That facilities means the body, the house, whatever it is, the conditioned nature. And then put the focus on that, on Upadana Maya, and ignore the Jiva Maya. And just say no, because we're focused on Upadana Maya, and that, and we don't follow any of the recommended processes for removing Jiva Maya, and somehow or another we're in a very superior dynamic spiritual position. This is like total illusion. So they're taking advantage of this aspect of our philosophy and shifting the emphasis from spiritual to mundane. And so then you get, yes?
I mean, it's also illogical, because if you change the cause, you will see the change in the effect.
Yes, yes.
But if you change only effect, not necessarily the cause is going to change.
So very good.
If we invest into Jiva Maya, the Guna Maya will follow.
Yes.
If we play with Guna Maya, the Jiva Maya remains as it is.
As it is, yes, yes. That makes sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole point, is because there is cause and effect. You're just saying, see the effect, we don't have to change the effect. So then they're happy, then that make a whole philosophy about keeping the effect the way it is. But our point is, no, you're changing the cause. Then if there's need to adjust the effect, it will naturally adjust. But the thing is even if it wants to naturally adjust, they'll say, no, no, it says we don't have to change this. So you shouldn't change it. You know, like you know what I'm saying? Yeah, like somebody comes in there, they're a student. They stay as a student. They work on it like that as a student. If they find that being a student isn't good for them, then they adjust that. And if they find it is, they keep it. You know, it's like Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the examples. You know, someone may ask, you know, on all this, okay, you know, this is different, you know, what ashram should I be in? So do we all have to take sannyas? Because that Shankara says that. So then, but then he gives so many examples. The Pandavas, they were all grihasthas, and you know, Prithu Maharaj, so many great personalities were grihasthas, you know, and great person. But at the same time, as you also had others like Sanatan Goswami, you know, and the six Goswamis. You had Srup Damodar. You had, you know, others. They found that the grihastha ashram wasn't favorable for them, and they gave it up and took sannyas. So the point is you change the consciousness, and whatever's favorable, that continues. So we see is that in the Guna Maya, then for those who were grihasthas, it didn't change. How they used it, how they looked at it, because now they went after that, they changed it, so they're no longer under Jiva Maya, now they're under Yoga Maya. But they used it nicely for Krishna. But then others found that, no, this is not working so well. You know, like Srila Prabhupada, he tried to bring his family along with him and all these things. As a grihastha, it didn't work. As a vanprastha, he tried to include, didn't work. So then he just took sannyas. He tried. You know, you can't say he didn't try. So the whole point was is that it's what's favorable. So that's the point. When you're dealing with the guna maya, it's whatever's favorable for changing the consciousness. Getting it out of Jiva Maya. Like that. But to just say, no, Guna Maya stays how it is, we don't have to change it and all this. So all that is it's just about the upadis. So they make Upadi Maya the focus. That it stays the same. And somehow or another claiming that that's spiritual now. And they don't necessarily follow the processes that are recommended to change the consciousness. You know, it's just it's in our heart, we feel it, and all this and that, and that's what all the hippies say. That all the bogus Indian gurus say that. You know, anybody on the material platform, they all say that. So what's new? You know? Every place says, you know, we're here, we do this. You know? Does that make sense? You know, anytime there's something, you know, it's like that. If there's a revolution, it's because this is who we are, and who are they to tell us what to do? Right? So what's new? How is this such a revelation, something new? It's just the same old thing. Same old mundane stuff. So Bhagavatam, that's the revolution in consciousness. That's a cultural revolution. That you're bringing a change in the misguided lives of the you know the you know the human population. That's dynamic. This other stuff is just more of the same. It's just Maya's trick to get us to not make so much endeavor.
Just to see Guna Maya is not enough to get out of the mind.
No, that's the whole point, is that Guna Maya is just what you have. Now what you do with it, now that's the point. Are you under Yoga Maya or Jiva Maya? So if you're under Mahamaya, then you're going to misuse your the material facilities. If you're under Yoga Maya, you're going to engage them in Krishna's service. So that's why we say it's not about the facility. It's about what you're, the consciousness and what you're doing with the facility. But if someone's attached to that facility, then fine. That's called karma yoga. Engage it in Krishna's service. But don't claim that it's but maintaining that attachment that is pure devotional service, it's mixed devotional service. It's a beginning stage. Don't try to present it that it's pure devotional service and it's the, how you say, the way, the light, and the truth. You know? It's just wrong. Yes, that's basic. That's what Gita starts off in the third chapter. That's what's explaining. And now it's something that's new and revolutionary. No, it's a beginning. But you're trying to get to pure devotional service. Because we have to remember the world's created by Krishna. So we say, we're from here. We're from this place, so we can't follow Krishna's, you know, universal laws. The Veda is given by Krishna. And all the 8,400,000 species, they're all given by Krishna. All the 14 planetary systems and their varieties, all given by Krishna. That is cold up north and is warm in the middle, that's given by Krishna. We didn't work that out. Like that? You know? So, therefore, this whole thing is that, we're from here, we have to do stuff from here. But what's from here? You know, what's from here?
Me and now.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, of course, like I say, want to be more exact, I, me, and mine. Like that. Yeah. Okay. Pradhana. Avyakrita. Avyakta. Our name's a Prakriti, which holds three gunas. It does not refer to the Chit Shakti or Yoga Maya. So whenever you say these words, pradhana, avyakrita, avyakta, they're only names of the material energy. The result of maya is the universe. By the Lord's entrance into the elements, they combined together and formed an unconscious globe, from which the universal form composed of the mass of jivas arose. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26-51. Right, so here's his entrance into the elements that we were talking before, is that avyakta element. The unconscious globe arose from the elements agitated, anu vidhe bhya, by the Lord. From that globe arose the universal form. Right, the universal globe called visesha, right, because you're giving, visesha means the uniqueness of everything, because it all exists, right, as pradhan, but now it takes on unique aspects, unique attributes in the way of the form, the action it can perform, and the results it can gain. Right? So then that way, then that is what the universal form is. It's all the possibilities you can get from the combination of these 24 elements in which the jivas can take part. Right? Either the, you know, in their living bodies or in the unconscious matter in which they can manipulate with those conscious bodies. Does that make sense? The universal globe called Visesha is surrounded by layers of elements such as water, each 10 times thicker than the previous layer, covered by a layer of Prakriti on the outside. Within the universe are the varieties of planets, which are a form of the Supreme Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:26-52. Universal globe. So that's interesting. It means this, you have what's inside the universe. That's the universal form. And then you have all the layers outside. Udriti, Srila Prabhupada. The universe, or the universal sky, which we can visualize with its innumerable planets, is shaped just like an egg. As an egg is covered by a shell, the universe is also covered by various layers. The first layer is water, the next is fire, then air, then sky. And the ultimate holding crust is pradhan. Within this egg-like universe is the universal form of the Lord as the Virat Purusha. All the different planetary system situations are parts of his body. This is already explained in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam's second canto. The planetary systems are considered to form different bodily parts of that universal form of the Lord. Persons who cannot directly engage in the worship of the transcendental form of the Lord are advised to think of and worship this universal form. The lowest planetary system, Patala, is considered to be the soul of the Supreme Lord. Soul meaning on the... Soul means like, what do you call it? Foot soul, not... Yeah. And the earth is considered to be the belly of the Lord. Brahmaloka, or the highest planetary system where Brahma lives, is considered to be the head of the Lord. Right? Because the head directs everything. Right? From the belly, everything becomes nourished. So the whole universe becomes nourished by what happens in the earthly planet. Right? People do yajna here, the universe becomes nourished. They don't do, then they, you know, nourish all the different species all over the universe. You know, like that.
That's why it's called Karma Bhumi.
Karma Bhumi, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because karma is done here. Everywhere else, you're just getting the results of your karma. It is said there that the planets are form, that the planets are a form of the Purusha, Bhagavata. Kapila spoke thus, the verses. Vriti, having addressed the universe as the form of the Lord, the next Anucheda distinguishes this material form, Virat Purusha, from the spiritual forms of the Lord which are worshipped by the liberated devotees. Right, So he's made the point, as we've discussed all these different aspects of the Lord and his energies, right? So now we're going to see, you know, going to this difference of how his position is separate from this and everything. Means you've shown he's beyond before. It's always mentioned he's beyond the modes of nature. He's unaffected in the Bhagavad Siddhartha, right? But now you're showing, you know, what's the connection. Is that okay? Anucheda 57. Shamsa, doubt. Since it was said above that this universe is a form of the Lord, that would mean it is spiritual like the Lord's form. Uttara. That is refuted by the following. The wise do not accept these two forms of the Lord described by me, since they are composed of matter. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:10-35. Udriki, Srila Prabhupada. The impersonalists think of the absolute personality of Godhead in two different ways, as above mentioned. On one hand, they worship the Lord in his Vishwarup, or all-pervading universal form. And on the other, think of the Lord's unmanifested, indescribable, subtle form. The theories of pantheism and monism are respectively applicable to these two concepts, conceptions of the Supreme as gross and subtle. And pantheism just means that everything's God. You know, anything can be worshipped that way. Right? But both of them are rejected by the learned pure devotees of the Lord because they are aware of the factual position. This is very clearly mentioned in the 11th canto of the Bhagavad Gita, which records Arjuna's experience of the Vishwarupa of the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. The non-devotee impersonalists imagine the forms of the Lord, and ultimately they merge in the impersonal Brahma Jyoti of the Lord. Whereas the pure devotees of the Lord are worshippers of the Lord both in the beginning and also in the perfect stage of salvation, eternally. The worship of the pure devotee never stops, whereas the worship of the impersonalist stops after his attainment of salvation, when he merges in the impersonal form of the Lord known as Brahma Jyoti. Therefore, the pure devotees of the Lord are described here as vipaschita, or the learned, who are in knowledge of the Lord, who are in the knowledge of the Lord perfectly. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.10.35, purport. Right, so, there means, as we mentioned before, the concept of the Lord is just part of their philosophy. It's not the philosophy. Because they'll worship up to gaining what they want. They go to the heaven planets, they stop worshiping the Lord. They go to the Brahma Jyoti, they stop worshiping the Lord. Right? You know, someone wants money, they get money, they stop worshiping. Right? But the devotees, they see the relationship with the Lord, they eternally worship. So they actually see. Well, the others, they make this distinction. And he only becomes very much, he just becomes part of what they gain. So they only see that aspect of the Lord that gives them their result. But that person, they don't see. So that's why they're only dealing with the Brahman and Paramatma features. They never actually deal with Bhagavan. It means Paramatma is Bhagavan. But because we only deal with him in how he controls everything, he acts with us just as Paramatma. But when you see him, he's a person. Then he reciprocates as a person, as that person. Does that make sense?
Yes. This might seem as when somebody is like religious, like he uses God for anything.
Yes.
It still looks in this world as a high level.
It is, because it's at least you're going to God. It is a higher level. But it's not as high as the pure Vaishnava understanding. So it's higher than the sensualist and the social or economic, you know, just people are interested in the economic platform. So it comes to a higher platform. It's a religious platform. And they include God, but it's not about God. That's why it's still material. But devotees use that same platform just to serve the Lord. So that becomes karma yoga. And the materialists use it without its connection to the Lord as worship of the Lord in devotion. So it's just called karma. They still may worship the Lord, but it's still karma. Because all they've done is they've bhakti misra karma. It's karma, but they've added a little devotion to it. So in that way, they're still better. But they're not as good as the devotees. Is that right?
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Jai.